Only the strongest sanctions will enable us to resolve this problem through diplomacy.
Nation's position amid deepening North Korea provocations. It's Wednesday, September 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Russia's role on North Korea emerges. India and Myanmar discuss Rohingya crisis. Cambodia's crackdown aimed at political opposition. Fighting resistant microbes. A record-setting astronaut. It's all on today's VOA Asia. South Korea conducted a second day of live-fire military drills Tuesday, this time involving Navy ships off the country's east coast. More are planned for today and Saturday. On Monday, South Korean warplanes and ground forces conducted a joint drill following North Korea's latest nuclear detonation Sunday, its sixth and largest. More missile launches are expected. Saturday, September 9th, is the anniversary of the North's founding. Past tests have often coincided with important national dates. The latest nuclear blast, which Pyongyang said was a hydrogen device, prompted an emergency UN Security Council meeting Monday and a call for tougher sanctions from U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley.
Only the strongest sanctions will enable us to resolve this problem through diplomacy. We have kicked the can down the road long enough. There is no more road left.
But Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday called further sanctions a road to nowhere and warned a military option could lead to a global catastrophe. China's foreign ministry Tuesday said the use of military force on the Korean Peninsula is never an option. RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett tells VOA's Victor Beatty North Korea's latest nuclear test was its most powerful, but whether it reached the threshold of a hydrogen blast is still in question.
Now, my definition of a hydrogen bomb is one of those weapons that goes off in the megaton range. So they're still a factor of 10 smaller than that. This is what we would usually call a boosted weapon. So it uses some fusion, which is what the hydrogen isotopes cause, but it's not a fully fusion weapon.
South Korea's defense ministry said Monday that the North appeared to be planning another missile launch, possibly an ICBM, to show off its ability to target the U.S. with nuclear weapons. Would that surprise you so quickly?
No, it wouldn't surprise me. I think what they're trying to illustrate is they didn't just get one or two engines from wherever it was they got them, the Ukraine or Russia or wherever, that they're actually trying to show that they're producing engines and therefore can shoot multiple missiles.
The United States and South Korea's defense ministry indicated that they were going to scrap South Korea's warhead weight limit. What does that mean?
Back in 2012, the U.S. and South Korea made an agreement that South Korea could have a ballistic missile with an 800-kilometer range and a 500-kilogram warhead, or a 550-kilometer range and a one-ton warhead. Those are all not bad estimates, but what South Korea is saying is they'd like to be able to have an 800-kilometer range and make them more defendable and still reach anywhere in the north with about a ton warhead, which is double the size of the current agreement.
Why were the limits put on in the first place?
Because the United States wanted to constrain the growth of the South Korean program. They didn't want it to be threatening China in particular. So we were trying to be cooperative with China in that regard.
The U.S. is apparently going to deploy, with South Korea's blessing, some strategic assets, possibly aircraft carriers or strategic bombers. The U.S. currently doesn't have any nuclear weapons on the South Korean side?
That's correct. We have not deployed nuclear weapons in South Korea for about 25 years.
What do you make of the U.N. diplomatic activity, calls for more sanctions? Will Russia and China veto any effort to impose more sanctions? They seem to be reluctant.
They are reluctant because they just don't know how unstable North Korea is. In fact, I think that's the best indicator of Chinese concern. If they're unprepared to accept more sanctions, they're saying that they think the North is really pretty unstable and they can't afford to apply more pressure.
Bruce Bennett said North Korea is clearly taking actions they don't need to take for defensive purposes, and he said Pyongyang is trying to decouple the United States and its regional allies. In Bruce Bennett's opinion, he says the North has been clear it's preparing for war. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. United Nations chief says North Korea nuclear threat is world's most serious. China and Russia oppose tougher North Korea sanctions. South Korea scrambles to improve weapons following North Korean test. Cambodian opposition leader formally charged with treason. Australia's High Court hears challenges to same-sex marriage vote. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, visit our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Russia and China say steps to further tighten sanctions against North Korea in the wake of its latest nuclear test would do little to ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The two also warned about the dangers of military intervention. Russian President Vladimir Putin Tuesday said tougher sanctions were senseless and would not change the leadership in Pyongyang. Such moves, Putin said, would lead to large-scale human suffering. Putin also warned of a global catastrophe if what he called military hysteria around North Korea continues to increase. Putin spoke to reporters in Xiamen, China, at the conclusion of a leaders' summit of the BRICS group of five major emerging economies, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Although Chinese President Xi Jinping was silent on the issue when he spoke to media and during the summit, perhaps missing an opportunity for Beijing to play a bigger role in resolving the crisis, Russian President Putin was not. At a press conference where he took questions from journalists, Putin clearly laid out Russia's views on North Korea, as well as a wide range of other issues from Ukraine to the treatment of Russian diplomats in the United States. Much like China, however, the amount of sway that Russia can have over North Korea is in question, says Professor Ramesh Thakur, director of Center for Nuclear Nonproliferation and Disarmament in the Crawford School of Public Policy, Australia National University.
I think the fact that North Korea carried out its test literally on the eve of the BRICS summit to be held in China is a signal of sorts that North Korea is beyond being ordered, even by its major patron or patrons.
Putin also said he will meet with the leaders of Japan and South Korea later Wednesday and Thursday in the Russian coastal city of Vladivostok, where he says they will discuss the North Korean crisis. The steps by Russia to seemingly play a more prominent role in dealing with North Korea are not likely to be a sign that it is competing with China. More likely, analysts say, it is that Moscow is using Pyongyang as a means to get back at the United States. At a regular briefing, a foreign ministry spokesman said China was prepared to discuss new sanctions at the United Nations Security Council, of which it is a member, along with Russia and the United States. Our thanks to VOA correspondent Bill Ide in Beijing for sending us the story. Happening now in Asia, a UN agency says the number of Rohingya going to Bangladesh to escape violence in Myanmar now tops 123,000 and is rising. The International Organization for Migration and partners are appealing for $18 million to provide the refugees with immediate life-saving assistance. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi Tuesday traveled to Myanmar, also known as Burma, as the Southeast Asian nation comes under growing criticism for a security crackdown on Rohingya Muslims that has killed hundreds and forced nearly 125,000 to flee Rakhine State, some wounded by landmines near the Bangladesh border. Mr. Modi, who is also trying to expand commercial and strategic ties in Myanmar, is expected to take up the issue of Rohingyas with State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi. India is preparing to deport about 40,000 Rohingya who are in the country illegally. Toronto-based business and rights democracy activist Vijay Sapini tells VOA while insurgents of the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army sparked the latest violence, the blame for the ongoing crackdown is squarely on security forces.
The junta continues to fail to protect the Rohingya, and the situation has been getting worsening. But the sad part is the Western world, who have played a significant role in bringing democracy to Burma, continue to fail the Rohingya. The focus should be on the junta, the military. The Western world and the media has been asking Daw Suu Kyi to speak up. She has no control over the military in Burma, as you would know. What the Western world needs to do is start to escalate pressure on the military and junta, but also local regional powers like India and Bangladesh need to step up and start engaging the junta in Burma to de-escalate the violence.
He says it's more than just a problem for the United Nations to address.
The United Nations has been effectively non-operational in many ways in Burma. It was Barack Obama's leadership that really saw some changes coming in. So to see an immediate effective action that will protect the Rohingya refugees, the West has to step up. But regional powers, including India, Bangladesh, Thailand, has to speak up. The escalation is alarming. The treatment of the refugees is deplorable. And the increased violence from the militants is going to lead to more conflict between the military and the Rohingya. Unfortunately, civilians will be caught in between and will be brutally massacred by the military.
Sopani says the West, specifically the United States, needs to hold the junta accountable for the safety of the Rohingya population.
The time is now that the U.S. primarily start looking at sending a special envoy to Burma to start negotiations and conversations, as we have done in the last two decades. The context of the conversations will be different this time. They need to really hold the junta to accountable to what they had promised, which they have not delivered. They need to focus specific to the Rohingya issues and the refugees and the handling of the military of Rohingya civilians.
Vijay Sapani said the Muslim world will have little impact in dealing with this refugee crisis. He said those with diplomatic and financial clout, India, Bangladesh, Thailand, the United States, China, and Japan, will be the key players in de-escalating the violence and finding a permanent home for the stateless Rohingya Muslims. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Japan says it is planning for a possible mass evacuation of the nearly 60,000 Japanese citizens currently living in or visiting South Korea, as tensions on the Korean Peninsula reach new heights with Pyongyang's latest nuclear test and possibly more action on the rogue nation's anniversary Saturday. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for the latest. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Cambodian opposition leader Kem Sokha has been formally charged with treason and is facing a stiff jail sentence if convicted. A court in the capital Phnom Penh announced Tuesday that the leader of the Cambodian National Rescue Party is accused of secretly colluding with a foreign entity to undermine the government. Sokha was arrested Sunday during a raid on his home along with his bodyguards. VOA Khmer reporter Kem Sing Min tells VOA Asia's David Byrd the government said it arrested Sokha based on his comments in a video broadcast by the private Cambodian broadcasting network based in Melbourne, Australia.
Allegedly, the speech that Sokha made was at a time when he was in Australia giving a speech to local supporters about his strategy to win the election, and with especially with the support of the U.S. Providing him training on how to set up a successful campaign in a democratic way.
Now, what could happen to him if he is found guilty? Does he face a long prison term, or could something more serious happen to him?
By law, he could face up to 30 years in jail, yes. But if you know, politics in Cambodia, there might be intervention from the king, or if Hun Sen himself is happy and then they have reached an agreement or a deal, and then the king would pardon him.
What does this mean for the future of opposition politics in Cambodia?
If the court case continues, it is a criminal case. So, and Sukha has an option to resign from the party to save the party from being dissolved, like his predecessor, Mr. Sam Rengsi, did early this year. He resigned from the party. Otherwise, his party would be dissolved.
This arrest comes before next year's parliamentary elections. What effect do you think it's going to have on that particular vote?
Very good question. Everything here that we've been talking is all related to the national election scheduled for July 2018. Look at this scenario. Right now, the two heads, Sukha, Rengsi, are out, obviously. I mean, the head of the party is out. And the government also tried to make it difficult for migrant workers who are now over a million working in the neighboring Thailand from registering to vote. They don't block them, but they create a lot of procedure that is difficult for them to come back to register. So it's like cutting the hand of the opposition as well. And plus, local NGO, international NGO, media like VOA and IFA have been taken off air and NDI ordered to leave the country. So with all these independent eyes and voice, the election in 2018 going to be in question.
You mentioned that VOA's broadcasts and Radio Free Asia's broadcasts have been taken off. Also, the main English language newspaper was ordered to shut down, allegedly for not paying its taxes, $6.5 million of what the government called back taxes. Is this arrest and these moves against independent media, are they part of a consolidation of power by Hun Sen? Is that what's going on?
It is so obvious, David. Just look at the figure. And in 2013 election, the CPP, Hun Sen's party, almost lost the election with the support of 3.2 million, and the opposition was only at 2.9 million. But in the last local election in June this year, normally local election would run in favor of the ruling party. But for the first time in four election, the opposition gained more momentum, moving from 2.9 supporter to 3 million. So you can tell the momentum for the national election normally would go to the opposition. And it's obvious that the CPP is in big trouble. That's why they have to fix the problem before the worst come to them.
Phnom Penh and Washington have been on warmer terms in the past. But now it looks as if Prime Minister Hun Sen is looking more towards Beijing than Washington and the United States. What is China's role in all this?
The China role in the Cambodian politics is increasing more and more. It's like I had a show yesterday with an analyst who looked at this issue. China has their hands in business. China has their hand in, you know, even though they have a policy of not interfering into their friends' internal affair. But guess what? This is the first time, I would say, after the arrest of Kam Sukha, China foreign ministry gave out a statement saying that China supports the government action because it's an effort of the government to protect national security and stability. So normally you would see only the U.S. would issue a statement on things like this, politics in the country, but this time China also weighed in.
VOA Khmer reporter Kem Sing Men speaking with VOA Asia's David Bird. This news alert from VOA Asia, flash monsoon flooding in Karachi, Pakistan's largest city, has claimed the lives of at least 16 people, most of them children. At least 11 deaths have been attributed to electrocution, as rising waters become electrified in low-lying urban areas, according to the city's main emergency aid agency. VOA Asia Facebook is your destination for top stories and features. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Israeli scientists have developed a peptide that could be used in antimicrobial medicines. Faith Lapidus tells us that could help treat infections in a post-antibiotic era.
The growth of antibiotic resistance, according to a British report, has led to 700,000 deaths annually around the world. The last new class of antibiotics was identified in 1984. During the past two decades, researchers have turned to peptides to fight resistant bacteria. Antimicrobial peptides are chains of amino acids the body produces as a first line of defense against infection. Zvi Hayuka led a team at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem that synthesized peptides with a random mix of amino acids, rather than the defined structure of natural peptides.
Instead of adding one amino acid, we're incorporating two or three or four amino acids in each position, and then we generate a combinatorial library that will contain many, many different sequences, slightly different sequences in our pool. And when we expose the bacteria to this kind of compound, we can see that they have very good activity and they can inhibit the growth of bacteria.
Their compound was visibly effective against both types of bacteria, gram-positive, like C. difficile, and gram-negative, like E. coli, as well as antibiotic-resistant strains, like MRSA.
As you can see here, this is a B. subtilis bacteria that on these digs we added our compound, and you can see very easily the inhibition zone that prevent the growth of the bacteria near our compound.
Hayuka's team hopes to begin clinical trials soon. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
As the old saying goes, records are made for breaking, and NASA astronaut Peggy Whitson has been breaking them in droves. VOA's Kevin Enix reports she's returned to Earth just a few days ago on September 2nd, and that has earned her a place among the nation's greatest space explorers.
Peggy Whitson first went into space in 2002. And she's been going back ever since. She's enough of a veteran to be able to gripe a bit about the living conditions.
Well, I was hoping the Soyuz would be bigger, but it seems to be about the same size as the last time.
Her latest stay in orbit began in November of last year, and she's home from the International Space Station. During those 9.5 months, she's found her way into the record books numerous
times.
Every
single day is important to us on board the station here. It's keeping the station alive one more day. We set a new personal best record for the station being on orbit and having permanent human presence up here greater than 17 years.
Most spacewalks by a woman, it's Whitson. First woman to command the space station and then command it again, Whitson. It's clear she loves it.
I feel great. I love working up here. It's one of the most gratifying jobs I've ever had. All the work that we do on the ground is fantastic, but being up here and being the person that's responsible for keeping the station alive, even if it means just cleaning the filters, is very satisfying for me.
And by the time she returns to the Baikonur Cosmodrome this weekend, she'll have logged 665 days in space, the most of any American.
I'm really looking forward to seeing friends and family in person. Being with them is going to be a great, great experience, and I'm looking forward to that the most, I'm sure. Food. I miss some of the variety of food, and so I'll probably be cooking up a storm, I imagine.
The 57-year-old hasn't lost her enthusiasm for space travel.
I think space has a really exciting future at NASA and in the world. I think we are going to be going places we've never been before, and so I think our young people ought to be really excited about participating and being a part of this really exciting future that we have.
NASA still hasn't said if Whitson will head back to space to try and break the world record for most time spent in orbit. That record, 879 days, is held by Russian Gennady Padalka. VOA's Kevin Enix.
I think a lot of us would like to take just one orbit around. That would be fun. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Don't forget, you can find our program in many different places, like iTunes and SoundCloud. Of course, we're on our website, voanews.com, and we stream daily on VOA Asia Facebook. Also a great place for you to get in touch with us. You can send us an email as well, voaasia@voanews.com. We'd also like to say hello to everybody listening in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, via Helps Radio at Help University. Thanks for stopping by. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Dan Crafton, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a wonderful day.